Okay, good afternoon. I'm Katie Watson. I'm the Executive Vice President of Human Resources at Gilead Sciences, which is a biopharmaceutical company based out of Foster City, and then offices around the globe. I'm thrilled to be here today at the Watermark Conference. Gilead is one of the major sponsors, and it's certainly my honor to introduce our speaker. When I think about Watermark's vision and their efforts to make sure that women make their marks on their companies, their careers, their communities, and even their families, for me it feels like such a wonderful connection to what we do as an organization. We set a goal this year to make sure that we have a broad and diverse, talented workforce, and that means adding additional women, adding additional minorities, adding diversity of thought. And so being here today as a sponsor and having over 70 of my colleagues here is just really a wonderful experience. I think you're going to love the next hour with Marshall. The topic is triggers, creating behavior that lasts, becoming the person you want to be. That's Marshall's new book, which he'll share with you. I'm sure many of you know Marshall, and that's why you're here. I personally got to know Marshall. Not only did he present to my worldwide HR team, he also coached one of our executives, so it was great to see that impact firsthand. Marshall is the world authority in helping successful leaders achieve positive, lasting change in behavior for themselves, their people, and their teams. He has been listed as one of the top 10 business thinkers in the world for the past 4 years, probably longer than that, actually. But, you know, at least the last 4 years. He's also been recognized as the number one leadership thinker in the world and number one executive coach. He's one of only a select few individuals who frequently gets to coach executives. And as of today, he's worked with over 150 CEOs and their management teams. He's the author and editor of over 35 books. And he's been on the New York Times bestseller with books including Mojo, and What Got You Here Won't Get You Here, Get You There, excuse me. His latest book, Triggers, is a 2015 number one New York Times bestseller and Wall Street Journal bestseller. Marshall gives away almost all of the videos and articles online, and he'll share that information with you. So please put your hands together, and we're welcoming Marshall Goldsmith to the stage.
Can you hear me now? Is the mic on? No. Can you hear me now? Sir? Can we look at the mic? Make sure the mic is on. I can't see it myself. Now can you hear me? Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Left a good job in the city. Well, let me briefly introduce myself. My name is Marshall Goldsmith. I'm from a small town called Valley Station, Kentucky. Went to undergraduate school, a little engineering school, Rose Holman Institute of Technology. Got an MBA at Indiana University, PhD at UCLA Anderson School. I was a college professor and dean when I was very, very young. Then for the last 39 years, I've done three things. One is like today, I give talks or teach classes. So I love speaking and teaching. It's a fun part of my job. Second thing I do, and most famous for, is I coach executives. And my coaching clients are typically the CEO or the could-be CEO of huge companies. And what I love about coaching is I learn so much. And one thing I'm very proud of in my book, Triggers, 27 major CEOs endorsed that book. Now, why am I so proud? 30 years ago, no CEO would admit to having an executive coach. They would have been ashamed to have a coach. Well, these 27 people include CEO of the Year in the United States, number three greatest leader in the world, winner of the Presidential Medal of Freedom, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, head of the Mayo Clinic. These are big people. What's nice about it, though, is now it's okay to have a coach. They don't have to be perfect all the time. And then the third thing I do is write and edit books and articles. My most popular book is a book called What Got You Here Won't Get You There. Have any of you read my book, What Got You Here? Oh, thank you. Many of you read this book. Thank you very much. Yeah, that was my 23rd book. And after writing 22 books, it was very good to write a book that someone finally bought, yes. Other than my mother, my father, and assorted relatives, somebody finally bought that book, so that's a good thing. And let's see, I've been married 42 years. My wife, Light, is a psychologist. My daughter, Kelly's a professor. My son's an entrepreneur. Life is good. The only hard part of my job is I do travel constantly. On American Airlines alone, I have over 11 million frequent flyer miles. Have any of you seen the movie Up in the Air with George Clooney? I have the card. And this always happens to me with a card, especially with women. I show them the card. They always say the same thing. You look exactly like George Clooney. Now, a couple of other things. One, I give everything away. I'm a Buddhist. All my material you may copy, share, download, duplicate, use in church, charity, nonprofit, business, use any of my material any way you wish. I've got hundreds of videos online you can look at, articles, everything. So just go to www.marshallgoldsmith.com. Use whatever you want. We're all going to die anyway. Do some good here, right? And the other thing is, send me an email. I love getting emails. Marshall@marshallgoldsmith.com. If you send me an email, I cannot get back to you immediately. I will get back to you eventually. So I love getting emails. Now, what are we going to be talking about today? One, we have an exercise program. My exercise program today is I'm going to walk around. Here is your exercise program. I never want to see the back of anyone's head. I don't want to see the back of your head. So as I walk around, you're going to turn, you see, so I don't see the back of your head. Now, what are our goals? Number one, understand the concept of triggers and how to better deal with environmental factors that change our behavior. Learn how help and structure can help us maintain focus, increase effectiveness. Next, I'm going to teach you something today that takes 2 minutes a day. 2 minutes. Costs you absolutely nothing. It'll help you get better at almost anything. Now, some of you are skeptical. 2 minutes a day, cost me nothing, help me get better at anything. That sounds too good to be true. My next prediction, half of you that start doing this will quit within 2 weeks. And you will not quit because it does not work. You will quit because it does work. Everything I want to teach you today is easy to understand. It's hard to do. For those of you that read my book, What Got You Here Won't Get You There, you read funny story after funny story after funny story. Well, it's tempting to read the book and think, what a bunch of idiots. Well, how could those people be so stupid? The idiots in the book all have IQs of 150 and they're CEOs of multi-billion dollar companies. They'll all tell you this stuff is real easy to understand. This stuff is hard to do. And then I'm going to finish by talking about one main issue faced by women more than men, and I'm going to give you specific and positive suggestions in this area. So the final 10 minutes is going to be my favorite 10 minutes in my women's leadership programs. Now, we're going to practice something today called peer coaching. You're supposed to come to this program and meet all kinds of interesting new people. You know what I noticed? Most of you sit with people you already know. That's now going to stop. You're going to stand up. Look around the room, find one person you do not know, sit next to that person, they're going to be your partner. Stand up! Stand up! Find a partner. Go, 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 go! Go, go, go! Find a partner. Okay, sit by your new partner. Sit by your new partner. Sit, sit, sit. Sit by your new partner. Very good. Okay. Ho! Sit by your partner. Sit, sit, sit. Quiet, quiet, quiet. Shh, 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 quiet. We are now going to practice peer coaching. Peer coaching. Shh, shh, shh. In peer coaching, you are not here to judge your partner. You are not here to critique your partner. You are not here to put your partner down. You are here to help your partner. I want you to shake hands with your partner and say, partner, my name is, I'm here to help. Go, shake hands with your partner. Go, 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 go. Now, what happens in life? What happens? I have a theory. My theory is almost everyone I meet, you know that person you want to become. If I interviewed any of you and say, describe this ideal you, I would hear this story about this good person and hardworking and cares about the customers and great values and in perfect physical condition and, you know, never acts like an ass, yada, 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 yada. What happens? There seems to be a little detour between this ideal person and this person that shows up every day. What goes wrong? Millions of people around the world are disengaged, depressed, not achieving our goals. New Year's resolutions, by February, the gym is generally empty. It's all over, right? Coaching clients don't change. Every day we fail on even little things. Why? As we journey through life, we are constantly bombarded by triggers. Now, what is a trigger? Any stimulus may impact our behavior. A sight, a sound, a person, a word. Triggers. And these triggers almost always throw us off track, especially if we don't know how to plan for these triggers. Now, as we journey through life, two ways to look at who's in control. First, external control. I am controlled by the world. internal control, I do control the world. Two different schools of thought, and then four different ways of looking at who's in control. By the way, very smart people believe in each of these four. The first one is called, it's a random walk. Chaos theory. There's not a whole lot of external or internal logic. Life is largely just a random crapshoot. Number two, I create the world. High internal control, low external control. This is epitomized by the motivational speech. Have any of you ever been to a motivational speech before? They're pretty much always the same. Jimmy was tired and sick and poor, and nobody said he could make it, and he couldn't find a date, and now he's rich and has three wives. So you know the story. Motivational speech almost always the same, right? This poor, tired, sick, hopeless person. They believed in themselves, and they said they could do it, and they did. The epitome of this is called a book called The Secret. Have any of you read this book called The Secret? One of the most ridiculous books ever written, The Secret. The book The Secret says, if I envision it, it will happen. If I envision it, it will happen. Here's what they did. They said, well, Mary wanted to be a movie star, and she envisioned it, and it happened. And then Sally, she wanted to be the basketball champion. And then she envisioned it, and it happened. And Jane, well, Jane had cancer, and she envisioned it would go away, and it did. And by the way, the stories were all true. There's only one minor problem in their research. They did not interview the dead people. They didn't interview the 1,000 waitresses in Hollywood who all envisioned being movie stars. They didn't interview the basketball team that lost. Well, they were envisioning the same things. Now, this business of envisioning, if I envision it, it will happen, I know that is not true from personal experience. If everything I envisioned would have happened as a teenage boy, my sex life would have been a whole lot better. I did a lot of envisioning and nothing ever happened. Right? Now, the other part of the equation is the opposite. The world creates me. B.F. Skinner. B.F. Skinner, the famous Harvard psychologist, his belief is we're like a stimulus response machine and we're constantly being driven by triggers in our environment. And these triggers basically control our existence. In my book, I believe in something called mutual creation. What does this mean? I am creating my world. And at the same time, triggers in my world are creating me. I am creating it, and at the same time, it is creating me. Fate, the hand of cards we've been dealt. We have all been dealt a hand of cards. And the one thing in life you cannot change at any second in time, you cannot change the hand. The one thing in life we cannot change, the past. The past is what it is. We've all been dealt this hand at this second in time. You can't change the hand. What is our choice? How do I play the hand? You can't change the hand. The one thing we can crawl over is how do I play the hand? Now, typically as we journey through life, there is a trigger. The trigger leads to an impulse, and the impulse leads to behavior. The goal of my book is there will still be triggers. That's not going to stop. You will still have impulses. That's not going to stop. The guideline, though, is become aware of what's going on and realize I have a choice. And more my behavior will be driven by the choice as opposed to my behavior is driven by the impulse. Negative case study. I was interviewed in the Harvard Business Review and asked a question. What is the number one problem of all the successful people you've worked with over the years? What is their number one problem? And yes, as I look into your eyes, I sense the problem in this room. I feel many of you may be afflicted with this disease. What was my answer? Winning too much. What does that mean? If it's important, we want to win. Meaningful, win. Critical, win. Trivial, win. Not worth it? Win anyway. Winners love winning. And the game of life, you're all winners. If you weren't a winner, you wouldn't be sitting here. It's hard for winners not to constantly win. I'm now going to give you a case study of winning too much that almost all my clients fail. Almost all of you will fail this case study. When I say fail, you'll fail yourself. You say what I did do is the opposite of what I know I should have done. Here is the case study. You want to go to dinner at restaurant X. Your husband, friend, partner wants to go to dinner at restaurant Y. You have a heated argument. You go to restaurant Y. The food tastes awful. The service is terrible. Option A, critique the food. Point out our partner was wrong. This mistake could have been avoided had only you listened to me, me, me. Option B, shut up. Eat the stupid food. Try to enjoy it and have a nice evening. What would I do? What should I do? Almost all my clients, what would I do? Critique the food. What should I do? Shut up. How many people in the room, please raise your hands, have ever critiqued the food before? Raise your hands. A room filled with food critiquers. Was that smart or stupid? Very stupid. And as stupid as it was, I'm going to give you an example now that is so hideously stupid, it will make that one pale by comparison. And I will predict at least half of you have done this. Case study number two. You have a hard day at work, a hard day, under so much pressure. Push, 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 more, 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 numbers, numbers, numbers. Such a hard day. You go home, your husband, wife, friend, or partner is there. The other person says, I had such a hard day today. I had such a tough day. And we reply, you had a hard day. You had a hard day. Do you have any idea what I had to put up with today? Do you think you had a hard day? We are so competitive, we have to prove we are more miserable than people who live with us. I gave this example in my class at Dartmouth. A young man in the back raised his hand. He said, I did that last week. I asked him, what happened? He said, my wife looked at me. She said, honey, you just think you've had a hard day. It's not over. Now, that's the negative case study of triggers. Now, let me give you the positive case study, and it's in the book, Triggers. The positive case study. A young man in my class sent me an email a couple of years ago. If any of you would send me such an email, today's a good day for me. Today's a good day. He sent me an email and he said, I know you do not remember me. He said, I want to send you an email today and say thank you. He said, yesterday I was having a terrible day at work under all kinds of pressure. And he said, my wife called me up and she started talking about what a hard day she was having. He said, I was just getting ready to point out how her problems paled in significance to my own. He said, for some reason, I remembered your little course. And I listened to my wife, and I breathed, and I thought, this is my wife. I said, I love you. Thank you for all the sacrifices you made for the family. He said, I went home, I spent $25, I bought her some flowers. I gave her the flowers, and I said, I love you. He said, that was the best $25 I've ever spent. Thank you very much. Well, the next time we get into this, I got to win. I got to be right. I got to prove how smart I am. Take a deep breath and ask a question. What am I winning? What am I winning here? Talk to your partner 20 seconds and answer this question. When's one time in the last few years you tried to win or prove you were right? When upon reflection, you're fighting a battle you shouldn't have been fighting in the first place. Go talk to your partner. Go, 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 go. Talk. Talk, 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 talk. So, what's one for you?
Huh?
When you tried to win, you shouldn't have been fighting.
Oh, yeah, well, my kids point out. You know, my husband and I are arguing about something. Why are you arguing about this? This is pointless. And they're like, they're heat. It's like, that's
unfair. I love your example. You're going to tell this one to the group. I love it. It's hilarious. Okay, stop, stop, stop. Now, wait a minute. Shh. We have a great case study up here in the front. I love it. Hey, tell yours to the group. I love hers.
So I was arguing with my husband about something absolutely trivial, you know, who was taking out the garbage or some just trashy thing. And it back and forth and back and forth it goes. And finally, my 8-year-old looks up at me and says, why are you guys arguing about this? It doesn't make any difference at all. And I thought, I've been one-upped by an 8-year-old.
That's her for her. Very good example. Now, why don't people do what I teach? I am going to make a prediction. I'm the only teacher you've ever met who's collected feedback from tens of thousands of people around the world, and I measure, do people do what I teach, and do they get better? Now, and by the way, if you'd like a copy of this article, it's called Leadership as a Contact Sport. You can send me an email or go to my website. It's all online. I got good news. People who do this stuff get better. I got better news. People who do nothing don't get worse. It's all good, right? Now, why don't people do what I teach? Years ago, my biggest client was a company called Johnson & Johnson. Anybody here from Johnson & Johnson? You are, a couple of you. No, you know, you're Johnson & Johnson? Yeah, and you know the standards of leadership. I wrote the original versions of the standard of leadership many years. I worked with the top 2,000 leaders, from Ralph Larson, who was the CEO, down to number 2,000. At the end of my class, I asked people to do some very simple stuff, and it's in the book, What Got You Here, We'll Get You There. Talk to people, follow up, measure, do you get better? 98% of the leaders in Johnson & Johnson said, I am going to do what Marshall just taught me. 98%. year later, 70% had done something and 30% zero, not 1 minute. I'm not ashamed of these numbers. I'm proud of these numbers. 70% of 2,000 people is 1,400 people. Getting evaluated by 10 coworkers each, 14,000 people had a little better life. I'm not ashamed of that. And I got to talk to people who did nothing and say, why'd you do nothing? The answer had nothing to do with ethics, values, or integrity. Johnson & Johnson won an award that year, most ethical company in the world. They're good people. You're good people. And nothing to do with intelligence. They're smart. You're smart. Why do people do nothing? It had to do with a dream. A dream. Yes, a dream I've had for years. I'm looking into your eyes. Many of you have had this dream. Yes, many of you have had this same idiotic dream on a recurring basis for years. And this dream is going to describe why in life we don't do what we know we should. Some of you are skeptical right now. You know what you're thinking? He doesn't know my dreams. What is he talking about? Do not bet against me on the dream. What does a dream sound like? You know, I'm incredibly busy right now. Given pressures of work and home and new technology that follows me everywhere and emails and voicemails and competition, I feel about as busy as I ever have. Sometimes I feel overcommitted. I don't tell others this, but every now and again my life feels just a little bit out of control. But you know, I'm working on some very unique and special challenges right now. And I think the worst of this is going to be over in about 4 or 5 months. And after that, I'm going to take 2 or 3 weeks and get organized. And I'm going to spend some time with the family. And I'm going to begin my new healthy life program. And after that, everything is going to be different. And it won't be crazy anymore. Has anyone in the room ever had a dream that vaguely resembles that dream? Now, how many years have we been having this same idiotic dream? There's not going to be any 2 or 3 weeks. Sanity is not going to be prevailing. Tomorrow's going to be crazier than today. Are any of you in a job where you get evaluated against numbers? You got to make those numbers every year. Come on, raise your hand. Numbers. You got to make some numbers. Numbers. Your first name is?
Megan.
Megan. Let's all pretend Megan has overachieved this year, overachieved on every number by 25%. Let's all hear it for Megan. 25%. Yes for Megan. Hooray for Megan. Megan, if that happens, what are the odds a big boss is going to come back next year and say, Megan, take a break? Well, you know, Megan, you're working too hard. And in fact, Megan, we're going to lower the goals for next year. Is that going to happen? What about next year's goals?
Probably higher.
I want you to raise your right hand and repeat after me. My name is Megan.
My name is Megan.
And it's always going to be crazy.
It's always
going to be crazy. Anybody an entrepreneur in the room? Run your own business. Entrepreneur. Oh, over here. Entrepreneur. Entrepreneur over here. And your first name is?
Heather.
Heather. Let's all hear it for Heather. 25% above all targets for Heather. 25% above every target for Heather. Heather, if that happens, what are the odds you're going to look at Heather next year and say, take a break? Lower the goals?
Unlikely.
Unlikely. What's going to happen to those targets next year, Heather? I want you to raise your right hand and repeat after me. See, she said, it is always going to be crazy. In your case, you're going to say, my name is Heather.
My name is Heather.
I am always going to be crazy.
I am always going to be crazy.
See, you can't blame, who's that nutcase that's driving Heather?
Me.
It's me. Well, you see, it doesn't matter if you work for a big company. It doesn't matter if you're an entrepreneur. It's never going to change. We just need to learn to make peace with, it's always going to be crazy. Now, as we journey through life, I may need help. Do I have any engineers in the room? Let's see. Help, help, help. Someone know about computers?
Escape.
Then what? Yay, let's hear it for a good advisor. Very good, very good. Now, why don't people do what I teach? We all have these classic delusions. We have these delusions about life, and they keep us from becoming the person we want to be. The first delusion is, I have the wisdom to evaluate my own behavior. Wrong. I've done studies with 80,000 people. 80,000 people. 70% of us believe we're in the top 10% of our professional peer group. 82% of us believe we're in the top 20. And 98.5% of us have concluded we're in the top half. Successful people are delusional. And the more successful we become, the more delusional we get. Have any of you been promoted in the past year? Promoted? Anybody been promoted? Yeah, did you notice? Those jokes got a little funnier. How about those comments? Oh, a little more profound. You even look like you've lost a pound or two. What happens every time we get promoted? They laugh at our jokes, act like we're smart, pretend we're pretty or handsome. It's very hard not to start believing this nonsense. I have the courage to evaluate my own behavior. Ink. No, we don't. I'm going to talk about that. I have willpower and I won't be depleted. Ink. My deepest learning for the last year is we grossly overestimate willpower. We grossly overestimate willpower. And then my biggest learning, I don't need help or structure to achieve my goals. I don't need help or structure to achieve my goals. Ink. We all need a lot more help than we want to admit. We all need a lot more help than we want to admit. And once we start admitting it, life gets better. For example, who in the room needs to be a better listener? Raise your hand. Better listener. Now, your first name is? Jill, how many years has Jill been needing to be a better listener? How long has this been going on, Jill, roughly?
As long as I can hear, I guess.
As long as you haven't fixed this your whole life. So you need it ever since you're a little kid. You never fixed it.
And my twins tell me it's
even
worse.
And your twins say it's even worse. Raise your right hand, repeat after me. My name is Jill.
My name is Jill.
I need to be a better listener.
I need to be a better listener.
I have not fixed this by myself in my entire life. Who am I kidding? I'm not going to fix this by myself next week. I need help.
I need help, for sure.
And it's okay.
And it's okay.
We all need help. Now, you're going to talk to your partner, and you're going to say, my name is. You're going to talk about one thing that you've been trying to fix for a zillion years. You haven't made any progress yet. And you're going to say, here's what I need to get better at. I need help, and it's okay. Go! Talk to your partner. Go, 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 go. Talk to your partner.
Can you go forward?
Yeah. Okay, good. Stop, stop, stop. Now, stop, stop, stop. Now, shh, shh, shh. The value of help and structure. The value of help and structure. There's a great book called The Checklist Manifesto, published by Dr. Atul Gawande from Harvard Medical School. Have any of you read this book, The Checklist Manifesto? Wonderful book. In the book, Dr. Gawande makes a very profound point. If you go in for a surgery, and a nurse asks the doctor a series of very simple questions from a checklist before the surgery, odds on unneeded infection plummet, and the death rate because of unnecessary infection is cut by about 2/3. Not a theory, fact. The huge majority of hospitals around the world do not allow the nurse to ask the doctor the question. What's the first question? Did you wash your hands? Why? Ego. According to Dr. Gawande, more people have died because of the egos of surgeons than died in the Vietnam War, the Afghan War, and the Iraqi War combined. Ego. The doctor is too proud to say, I'm a doctor. I need help. It's okay. So guess what? People all get to die. Why? Because the doctor is ashamed to admit they need help, ashamed to admit they need this kind of structure. Now, that's a negative case study. On the positive side, for 9 years, I trained admirals in our fine United States Navy. Any of you ever done any business with the military before? Ever done that? Yeah, I don't charge them any money because their billing bureaucracy is such a phenomenal pain in the butt. I said, we'll both make more money if you pay me nothing. So don't pay me here. So they don't give me money, but they give me treats. So a few years ago, my treat, day in a nuclear submarine. Me and 8 other old men got to stay out there all day, diving under the waters, pretending to torpedo things. Oh, it's great. Last year, my treat was even better. Where'd I get to go? Highway to the danger zone. Have any of you seen the movie Top Gun? I got to fly 95 minutes on a U.S. Navy Top Gun fighter jet. 6 G's, oxygen, flying upside down. Got to fly the plane myself for 10 minutes. And I'm very proud to say, I did not throw up. Very good. Now, before we took off, I noticed this kid is asking my host, Emma Mark Guanini, a series of simple questions from checklist. First question for the doctor, did you wash your hands? First question for the admiral, how much fuel do you have? I said, sir, this is very puzzling. The doctor don't like the nurse asking a question because her ego is too big. I said, no offense, sir. Nobody in the world's got a bigger ego than the United States Navy Top Gun fighter jet pilot who becomes an admiral. You got the biggest ego in the whole world. Yeah, you don't care. This kid asked you the question. I said, sir, what is the difference? He looked at me and said, Marshall, there's a huge difference. Operation crashes, you die. Plane crashes, I die. He said, you put a gun to that doctor's head and said, this patient dies of an unneeded infection. I'm going to blow your brains out. They'd ask the questions twice. Well, how important is our ego and pride? Every day we make it more important than our health, our safety, the people we love, all kinds of stuff. Get over that ego pride thing. Life is a whole lot better. Life is a whole lot better. Now I'm going to teach you something called the daily question process. This is what takes 2 minutes a day, costs nothing, it's going to help you get better at almost anything. Are we ready? Yes. Look into the eyes of your partner. Look into the eyes of your partner. I want you to imagine your partner is going to call you on the phone every day for the rest of your life. Every day that partner is going to call you on the phone the rest of your life. Every day. Are you single or married? Bad idea. Every day your partner is going to call you for the rest of your life. Now, I pay a woman to call me every day. Her name is Kate. She called me today. She called me yesterday. She calls me tomorrow. She calls me every day. Kate. Every day, Kate listens to me read 32 questions I wrote and provide 32 answers I wrote every day. Somebody asked me a question. Why do you pay some woman to call you every day to do this? Don't you know the theory about how to change behavior? Don't you know the theory about how to change behavior? I wrote the theory about how to change behavior. That's why I pay a woman to call me every day. I know how hard this is. Why do I pay a woman to call me on the phone every day? My name is Marshall Goldsmith. I'm the world's leading executive coach. I pay a woman to call me on the phone every day just to listen to me read questions I wrote and provide answers I wrote every day. Why do I do this? I am too cowardly to do this by myself, and I am too undisciplined to do this by myself. I need help, and it's okay. It's okay. Twyla Tharp, the world's greatest choreographer, same personal trainer for 27 years. He doesn't teach her anything new. Well, she had the same personal trainer for 27 years. My name is Twyla Tharp. I don't have the courage to do this every day. I don't have the discipline to do this every day. I need help. That's why she looks so good. That's why she's still a great dancer. Why? She's smart enough to admit she's not perfect and she needs help, and it's okay. It's okay. Now, the daily question process, how does this work? You're going to get out an Excel spreadsheet. On one column, you're going to write down a series of questions that represent what's most important in your life, and you write your own questions. Friends, family, health, whatever it is you want to do, work, anything you like. Every question has to be answered with a yes, a no, or a number. And what happens then, at the end of the week, seven boxes across, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, at the end of the week, that Excel spreadsheet will give you a report card that will warn all of you in advance. That little report card at the end of the week may not be quite as beautiful as that corporate values plaque you got stuck up on the wall. You do this every day, you learn something very fast. Life is real easy to talk. Life is real hard to live. You do this every day, you realize this is not so easy. This stuff is tough. Easy to talk about, not so easy to live. Now I'm going to share some of my questions. My questions are not intended to be your questions. The idea of this process, you write your own questions. I'm going to share mine by way of example. You don't need to write them down. If you want all my questions, send me an email, marshall@marshallgoldsmith.com. I'll send you all of my questions and an article describing the process. What's one of my questions every day? How many times yesterday did you try to prove you were right when it was not worth it? I've almost never got a zero my whole life. Kind of hard for that old professor not to be right all the time. See, my biggest problem is not doing what I do. My biggest problem is stopping. I'm always on an airplane. Sometimes I go on an 8-hour flight. Sometimes some poor man sits next to me. occasionally he makes a terrible mistake. He looks up and he goes, "What do you do for a living?" 8 hours later, the poor man, why did I ask? Great is the need of the student to learn. Far greater is the need of the teacher to teach. Far greater is the need of the teacher. Oh, you're in HR, is that correct? Have you ever used HR techniques to help friends and family members? Have you tried that? And do they love your helpful ways? No, not so much. Another question for me is, how many angry or destructive comments did you make about people yesterday? Yeah, we all say we want to treat people with respect. If that's so important, how come I stabbed people in the back about 20 times yesterday? How many minutes did you walk? How many push-ups did you do? How many sit-ups did you do? Did you say or do something nice for your wife? Did you say or do something nice for your son? Did you say or do something nice for your daughter? Say or do something nice for your son-in-law, your grandchildren? Just simple questions. How many minutes did you write? All those books, they don't write themselves. How many minutes did you write? My friend Jim Moore does this, and I'll tell you, this process saved his life. It did. Any of you know Jim Moore? He used to be chief learning officer of Sun Microsystems. Anyway, he's a great guy. He would tell you this process saved his life. It did not kind of save his life or sort of save his life. It did save his life. It was one of his daily questions. Are you currently updated on your physical exam? Currently updated on your physical exam. First 90 days he did this, he said no every day. No. After 90 days, he said, this is embarrassing. I'm failing a test every day, and I wrote the question. This is embarrassing. I got to get the dumb exam or quit asking the question. He got the dumb exam. What'd the doctor say? You have cancer. That was many years ago. He's going to be fine. The doctor also said, had you waited 7 more months, you'd be dead. He knew he should have got a physical exam. He was 65 years old, chief learning officer of 3 multi-billion-dollar companies. He wasn't a stupid man. He knew he should have got a physical exam. He just didn't do it. Somebody holds a mirror in your face every day, it's hard to hide. It gets real hard to hide. Let me ask you all a question. How many of the fine women in this room, how many of you all have ever avoided a physical exam before and told yourself, I'm going to get that exam after I go on my healthy foods diet and begin my exercise program? Come on, get these. Come on, hands up in here. Look at all these hands. Now, did we trick the doctor with that strategy? I was teaching at the University of Michigan. This man raised his hand. I said, sir, did you trick the doctor with that strategy? He looked at me and goes, I am the doctor. Now, you're going to talk to your partner. And you're going to say, good partner, here's one question I should challenge myself with every day. Your partner is going to say, here's a question I should challenge myself with every day. Then you're going to go back and forth until I say stop. To your marks, get set, go, talk to your partner. Go. Oh, you're my timekeeper, right? You're the time. Oh, timekeeper. Hi, timekeeper. Yeah, when did we start? When am I supposed to finish? When I? Oh, I'm in good shape. Good shape. Yeah. The timing is easier the second time. We started early. They've got to cut out a bunch of stuff. Yeah. Okay. Stop. Now, shh. I love listening to people's questions. So you tell me your question. I'll repeat it so everyone can hear. What's one question you should challenge yourself with every day? Yes, you or her. It's okay. What's one good thing I did for myself today? Very nice question. How about you? What's one question you should challenge yourself with every day?
Did I tell my husband I loved him?
Did you tell your husband you loved him? That's a good one. That's a nice one. What's one for you every day?
Oh, it's not so nice, but you know, how many bad things did I say about people yesterday?
Well, that's one of mine. Hey, it may not be nice, but that's one of mine too, so don't. By the way, we all do that a lot more than we should. How about one for you every day? That's one good one. Okay, see, everybody says good things. Your homework assignment is you write down those questions, and then they come from inside you, and the idea is you start measuring it every day. You either believe it or you don't. If you believe it, start measuring it. If you don't really believe it, don't put it on the list. What becomes painfully obvious when you do this is, who have I been kidding all these years? Who have I been kidding all these years? Yeah. I keep saying I believe in this stuff. Well, it never seemed to happen to do it every day. Now, my daughter Kelly, some of you may have met my daughter Kelly before, or seen her, excuse me, not probably met her, seen her before. My daughter Kelly is a graduate of Duke University and was on the TV show Survivor Africa. So if you saw the third season of Survivor, Kelly was one of the little survivors on Survivor. After being on Survivor Africa, then she worked with Mark Burnett 2 years. She did casting for Survivor, for The Amazing Race. And then after being on Survivor and The Amazing Race, she went back to school. She got a PhD at Yale University. And now she's a marketing professor at the number one ranked Kellogg School of Management. And she's a professor there. And she just got ranked as one of the top 10 business school professors in the world under 40. So daddy's a proud father. Now. And by the way, when she was 14, completely hideous. So, do any of you have teenage daughters? There is hope. There is hope they get better sometime. She and my wife, they loved each other till she was 12. They hated each other till she was 17, but now they love each other again. So just 5 years of hate, not too bad, not too bad. So anyway, my daughter Kelly, the professor. So I'm talking to Kelly. Oh, the other thing is, all those zillion dollars of checks I wrote for her, yeah, she did get married. I want to tell you how many checks I wrote. Two words. When your daughter gets married, you hear these two words, you know you're screwed. Vera Wang. Oh, yeah. Bye-bye. So my daughter wasn't that inexpensive. Good news for her, though. She's come up with an idea I'm actually making money from. So you never know. These things can change. My daughter taught me something that is incredible. So we're working together, and you know the topic of employee engagement? Employee engagement? You've all heard of this phrase, employee engagement. I'm on something called the National Academy of Human Resources. So and they have like the top HR people, a bunch of big companies, and then they have like so a few consultants like me tossed in. So I'm at this meeting, and three of the top HR people in the world are talking about the topic of employee engagement. And I talk about everything the companies can do to engage the employees. And it's all good. They're talking about, you know, training programs and empowerment and this and that and the other. It's all very good stuff. They're very smart people. As I listen, I realize something. 100% of the discussion was, what can the company do to engage you? And 0% was, what you can do to engage yourself. Now, this is not exaggeration. 100%, zero. I don't know if you remember the famous John Kennedy speech, ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country. This is 100% the opposite of the John Kennedy speech. The whole thing was what somebody do for me with no responsibility to have any responsibility for my own life. Well, I'm listening to this, and I thought, I didn't disagree with anything they said. Whatever they said was good. They're very smart people. The problem is not what they did say. The problem is what they did not say. They missed half of an equation. Now, everyone look up here. I fly constantly. I'm on a typical American Airlines flight for 3 hours. One flight attendant is positive, motivated, upbeat, and enthusiastic. One is negative, bitter, angry, and cynical. Have any of you ever been on such a flight before? One guy said, I skipped the good one, right? Well, same plane, same uniform, same employee engagement program. What's the difference? Not the outside, it's on the inside. So Kelly really got the idea, really get people to think about, what can I do different? And Kelly taught me something called active questions. Everything on employee engagement has been passive questions. Do you have clear goals? Passive question. Do you have a friend at work? Passive question. Do you have meaningful work? Passive question. Kelly's point is, if we ask people a passive question and they have a negative response, they almost always blame the environment. Do you have clear goals? Why not? They're confused. Do you have meaningful work? No, they make me do trivia. Do you have a best friend at work? They're all jerks. No, it's them. Well, Kelly taught me the value of active questions that begin with the phrase, did I do my best to? Did I do my best to? Now, these are now my first six questions, and I highly recommend these six questions for all of you. Number one, did I do my best to be happy? Rather than saying, did somebody make me happy, did I do my best to make myself happy? Did I do my best to find meaning? Rather than saying, did somebody create meaning for me, did I do my best to create meaning for myself? Did I do my best to be fully engaged? Rather than saying, did the company engage me? Did I engage myself? Did I do my best to build positive relationships? Rather than saying, do you have a best friend? Were you the best friend? And did I do my best to set goals and make progress? Now, you're all invited to participate in a research study. Anybody that would like to participate, send me an email, marshall@marshallgoldsmith.com. Just write 6-question study, and I'll sign you up for the research study. I'm going to warn you in advance, you're going to get tested on these 6 questions every day. You will be tested on these 6 questions every day for 10 working days. What do our results say so far? 95 studies, 2,793 participants, 46% of the people who participated in our research said 10 days later, I'm better at everything. Happier, more meaningful, more engaged. 75% said I got better at 4 out of 6, 94% said I got better at 1, 6% said no change, less than 1% said I got worse. Why? Every day these questions get me to focus not on what I cannot change, they get me to focus on what I can change. And by the way, what is that one question I'm always responsible for? Did I do my best? That's one we can't blame on somebody else. Did I do my best? Now I'm going to finish with the one issue for women. Are we ready?
Yes.
I'm often asked a question. Are there gender differences in leadership feedback? Differences yes. between women and men? The answer is yes. There are 2 statistically significant gender differences. Are we ready?
Yes.
Gender difference number 1. The average woman in 360-degree feedback is perceived to be a better leader than the average man. Now, this doesn't mean every woman is better than every man. It just means the average woman is seen as a better leader than the average man. Marion Ruderman, Center for Creative Leadership, huge study. Kuzis and Posner, even bigger studies. You're agreeing too much. There's a difference between winning and gloating. We're beginning to gloat a little bit here. Yeah. Winning is good, gloating is bad. The average woman is seen as a better leader than the average man. For the women in the room. The average woman has one issue to deal with consistently and amazingly more than the average man. I see it in many of your eyes. Women are too hard on themselves. One coaching I have for women, far more than men, not even close. Please quit being so hard on yourself. You're not going to be the perfect wife, mother, friend, boss, everything. Quit being so hard on yourself. Now, the one issue with women more than men, don't be too hard on yourself. What do I tell men when I teach this? I say, men for us, there's bad news. Yet men for us, there's good news. Bad news for us men is, according to all this stupid research, unfortunately involving thousands of people from around the world, I guess the bad news is we have to tell the truth. As leaders, we're not as good. Yet men for us, there's good news. What's the good news? We don't care. They're not as good, but they don't care. Now, I'm now going to spend 10 minutes of all my leadership stuff I do for women. This is one I've done with thousands of women. It's the 10 minutes people like the best. Is everybody ready? I want everybody to smile. I want you to take a deep breath and do your hand like this and go, ah, hand, hand, ah, hand, 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 ah, ah. Now, I'm going to spend 10 minutes, and this 10 minutes is my favorite 10 minutes on my women's leadership programs. Are we ready? For 10 minutes, we're going to have 4 rules, and I'm going to watch you like a hawk. You have to follow these 4 rules. Are we ready? And for some of you, it's going to be tough. Rule number 1 for the next 10 minutes, you cannot attempt to learn something. Put those pencils and papers down. I see you taking notes. No more note-taking. Put those machines away. For 10 minutes, you cannot attempt to learn something. Watching you like a hawk. It's going to get a lot harder. For the next 10 minutes, you cannot try to become more productive. For the next 10 minutes, you cannot even think about becoming a better person. And finally, for the tough one, for the next 10 minutes, you cannot even consider helping others. I want you to spend 10 minutes and focus on one thing, your own happiness and self-acceptance. Just 10 minutes. I taught this to a large group of women in India. 2 women just broke down. They didn't just start crying. They just lost it. Nobody ever gave them 10 minutes. Now, several of you already have tears in your eyes. I want you to think about a bunch of men. If I said men, now boys, no matter how difficult this may be, men, for the next 10 minutes, you must focus only on your own happiness. Yeah. How many men have tears in their eyes? You know, thinking, shit, let's spend all day on that topic, right? And you know what a lot of the men are thinking? Has there ever been another topic, right? Well, it's not that women are better or worse or men are better or worse. Just for most men, I can tell you, this is really not their problem. This is really not their problem. Now, I'm going to teach you a good Buddhist be happy technique. Is everybody ready? Buddha said, every time I take a breath, it's a new me. So I want you all again, smile. Take a deep breath and go, hand, ah. Now I want you to think, new me. It's a new me. Okay, stop, close your eyes. Everything that happened before this second in your life was done by an infinite set of women. Their names were the previous me's, previous you's. I want you to think of that infinite set of women, the previous you's. Think of all the gifts they have given the you that's sitting in this room right now. Think about the many things they've done to help other people. And think about how hard all those women tried. Open your eyes. If any group of women did that many nice things, what should you say to those good women? Thank you. Do your hands like this. Say, thank you. Thank you. Now, did they make a little mistake or two? Everybody look up here. Who's the first person we need to learn to forgive? Let's forgive this person. I've asked thousands of mothers around the world this question. I say, give me one word. When my child grows up, I want my child to be. One word comes up from mothers more than every other word combined, no matter what country I'm in. What's that word? Happy. You want your kids to be happy? Want your parents to be happy? Want the people who love you to be happy? Do you want the women who respect you to be happy? You go first. You be happy. Now, I want you to think of one person who makes you feel bad, guilty, angry, or crazy. Can everybody come up with just one? Now, if she is in the room, don't point at the person right now. I've had that happen. Her. Right? Now, I have a question. How much sleep is that person losing over you tonight? None. That sounds like a zero, a zero, a zero, a zero, and another zero. I got another question. Who's being punished? I got another question. Who's the one doing the punishing? You don't have to like that person, respect that person, or agree with that person. Starting now, you're going to tell yourself, you are no longer going to make me feel bad. You know why? Life is too short. The two monks are walking by the stream. They see a woman, and she has on a beautiful silk dress, and the woman is crying. One monk comes over. He goes, why are you crying? She says, I have this beautiful silk dress my mother gave me, and I got to cross the stream to get to the wedding. If I cross the stream, I'm going to ruin my beautiful dress. I don't know what to do. One monk says, we can't help you. Can't even touch women. Against the rules. The other monk says, oh, to heck with the rules. Picks her up on the shoulders, carries her across the stream, drops her off the other side. She goes, oh, thank you, nice monk. Thank you, good monk. Monk is happy. So what happens? They walk back to the home of monks. The other monk is angry. You're a bad monk, a terrible monk, a disgusting bad man. Monk says, why am I bad? We're not supposed to even touch that woman. You're picking her up, carrying her on her shoulders. You have to save yourself, you bad monk. The wet monk says, shit happens. They walk back to the home of monks, all the way back. Bad monk. The wet monk drives off and goes to sleep. In the middle of the night, his colleague is still angry. You're a bad monk. He wakes him up. Why am I bad? You carried that woman. Sleepy monk says, what woman? The angry monk, the one you carried across the stream. Sleepy monk says, oh, her? I only carried her across the stream. You carried her all the way back to the monastery. Some of you all been carrying some people around with you. I can see them in your eyes. They do not make you happy. Next time you think about those people, take a deep breath. Leave them at the stream. I was teaching the women's program for Goldman Sachs. One of their top investment bankers raised her hand. She goes, excuse me. I call her, she goes, excuse me, could I please submerge them in the stream? Now, some final advice, pick a path. Pick a path through life. It's your path. Any path that you pick through life is going to have trade-offs. Make peace. Make peace with these trade-offs. Make peace. And do not go through life doing this to yourself. Life is too short. Life is too short. One other bit of advice. You do not have to be a role model for all other women. Drop that. You shouldn't have to carry that around. If you make a mistake, you haven't let down every woman who came before you and every woman who came after you, and you have disappointed half of the entire world because you screwed up last week. You shouldn't have to carry that crap around. You just show up, you do your best, you try to be a good person and make peace. That's good enough. How many of the old white guys running your company are saying, I've got to be a role model for the other old white boys today? Not so many, right? Not so many. So you don't really have to carry that stuff around. Finally, I'm going to finish with my favorite coaching advice in the world. Are we ready? One final time, smile, deep breath. Ah, ah. Now, I want you to imagine you're 95 years old. You're 95, and you're just getting ready to die. You're on that deathbed. Here comes your last breath. Right before you take the last breath, you're given a beautiful gift, the ability to go back in time. The ability to go back in time and talk to the person in this room. The ability to help this woman be a better leader, much more important, have a better life. What advice would that wise 95-year-old you who knows what mattered in life and what didn't, what was important and what wasn't, what advice would that wise person have for the you that's sitting in this room right now? I don't just say anything, do anything, write anything. Just answer that question in your mind. What advice would that old woman have for you? Whatever you're thinking now, do that. In terms of performance appraisal, that's the only one that's going to matter. That old woman says you did the right thing, you did. That old woman says you made a mistake, you did. You don't have to impress anybody else. Some friends of mine interviewed old folks who were dying, got to ask this question, what advice would you have? On the personal side, three themes. Theme number one, three words, be happy now. Not next week, not next month, not next year, be happy now. Great Western disease. I'll be happy when I get the money, status, BMW, condominium, don't worry about it. I'll be happy when. Learning point from old people, I got so busy focused on what I didn't have, I couldn't see what I did have. I had everything. Many of you are among the luckiest people that ever lived. Many of you have friends and you have family, you have people you love, you have health, you have interesting jobs. Compared to me, you have youth, you got it all. Don't get so wrapped up chasing what you don't have, you can't see it. Learning point number two, friends and family. Many of you work for wonderful companies. I'm going to help you. When you're 95 years old, you look around that deathbed, none of your coworkers are waving goodbye. You start to realize these friends and family, they're kind of important. They're the only people that care today. And learning point three, if you have a dream, go for it. Because if you don't go for it when you're 35, you may not when you're 45, and you probably will not when you're 85. And it doesn't have to be a big one, maybe a small one. Go to New Zealand, speak Spanish, play a guitar. Other people think your dream is goofy. Who cares? It's not their dream. It's your dream. It's not their life. It's your life. Old people try to achieve our dreams. We're always happier with our lives. I had a very embarrassing experience a couple of years ago. I was teaching this class, and I said, go to New Zealand, speak Spanish. Guy raised his hand. He goes, we're in Spain, you idiot. We all speak Spanish. Business advice isn't much different. Number one, life is short. Have fun. Number two, do whatever you can do to help people. The main reason to help people has nothing to do with money or status or getting ahead. The main reason to help people is much deeper. The 95-year-old, you will be very proud of you because you did and disappointed if you don't. And if you do not believe this is true, interview any CEO who has retired. I've interviewed very many and asked them a question. Please tell me, what are you proud of? None have told me how big their office was. All they ever talked about is people they helped. Fine advice also the same. Your industry's changing, your world's changing, go for it. Do what you think is right. You might not win, at least you tried. Old people, we almost never regret the risk we take and fail. We all regret the risk we fail to take. And the final thing I would like to say, it's been my honor to work with all of you today. Hope you found our little hour together to be practical and useful and hopefully help you have just a little bit better life. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Now, if anybody would have any questions for me, I'm going to stick around and I'll be up here, but everybody else can take off. So thank you. Thank you.